Adventure Woman Radio, and I am Beth Walls, the host of Adventure Woman Radio, and today we are talking about the mysterious and magical world of escape artists. So we have Dale Krall on the phone currently, and we are thrilled to have her on the phone. Dale, welcome to Adventure Woman Radio.
Thank you. Thank you. Nice to talk to you.
Well, to begin with, what is an escape artist? I was looking through the internet and doing a little research, and I guess there's escape artists also called escapologists. It all sounds very exciting and intriguing. So is it the same as a magician? Give us, what is an escape artist?
Well, I would say that escapology is a branch of magic, but it isn't the same as magic. You could kind of describe it as a subcategory of the magic field. But I know that some escape artists, they don't like that association because they feel that it kind of leads people to believe that everything they do is done by trickery, but it isn't. So they say that they don't like to be associated with that. It's pure physical skill and no trickery involved. So they're sort of related in my mind, but some people don't like that association.
So when we're seeing an escape, what we're seeing is not just all smoke and mirrors. We're seeing someone actually getting out of a certain situation that's
mm-hmm.
actually real. I mean, we're not talking about handcuffs that break or water that's not there,
yeah.
Or et cetera, et cetera.
No, there's people have died doing escapes. They've died doing it. There's a very real danger aspect of this, very real risk involved.
Now, how long have you been doing escapes?
I started in 2003, but my first actual performance was for an event called the Worldwide Escape Artist Relay, and that was in 2005. I was locked up in a stainless steel straitjacket and then locked up into a tank of water.
Oh, my goodness. So just stepping back, how did you start this? I mean, did you start as a young girl? Were you enthralled with magic and, you know, or getting yourself out of tight situations? I mean, where did the seed germinate?
To be honest, it was my partner, Richard, that introduced me to magic and escapes, and without him, I wouldn't be here today, and that was just in 2003. I had no previous experience with magic or escapes, but his love of escapes fostered my own. I trust him completely. I trust him with my life. And if he wasn't outside of the escape, I wouldn't be inside of it. But because he's been doing escapes for years, Richard's 6'3", 225 pounds, I'm almost a foot shorter and more than 100 pounds lighter. There's a really big size difference between us, and we thought we should take advantage of that. Society seems to have this mentality still of saving women and children first, and to see a woman in a precarious situation, it elicits a stronger response in the audience. People seem to care more and they worry more. So we designed and built a few escapes and I jumped in, so to speak. But there's also a safety factor. You know, if something goes wrong, Richard's so much bigger than I am. He's so much stronger than I am. He can actually save me, so to speak. He can do something, pull me out of the water torture cell or pull me out of some other escape that I'm stuck in. But if it were reversed, I'm so much smaller than he is. I'm not sure how effective I would be if something went wrong and he was locked into a water torture cell or something like that. So there's a real safety aspect of it as well.
Are you ever in a situation where he can't even save you? I mean, are you ever really feel like you have your life on the line, or do you kind of in the back of your head always know there's a plan B, there's a way out?
We practice and we rehearse and we put in as much safety as possible, but there are situations where I am on my own. There's an escape that we have, we called it Crucible. I'm locked into a cage, I'm handcuffed, locked into a cage, the cage is raised up. It's lowered down into a tank of water, which has a sort of a cage outside of it, and the lid is locked and that cage is locked. Then I'm pushed into something we call the vault. It's this enclosure, this steel enclosure, and I'm locked within this vault. I'm in pitch black. I'm completely on my own, and, you know, we have as much safety as possible, but, yeah, I'm out there on my own. If something goes wrong, he may find out, but it might be too late.
Wow. Now, this must be a great adrenaline rush on one level. On one level, I mean, I think I would be scared to death. But on the other hand, it sounds so exciting to be able to do these escapes. Does it become addictive? I mean, do you really say, you know, wow, do you start to thirst for the actual excitement of the acts?
I wouldn't describe it as addictive, but I keep pushing myself and my abilities. I'm not addicted to it. I just like to challenge myself. There are days when I sit there, I'm tired, I think, oh, my God, what am I doing? But then there are most days when I think, okay, bring it on, I'm ready, let's go. You know, you get pumped up for it. But I find for myself, when I get, it's when I'm trying to sleep at night where I sit there and I say, oh, my God, you know, what was I doing? What was I thinking? So it's at night after the fact when I sit there and I'm like, whew, what was that all about, you know?
Now, you mentioned, did you mention the Chinese water torture cell or which one?
Yes.
You had mentioned one. Yeah. Now, isn't that something Harry Houdini had done?
Yes. Yeah. That was one of his, what he's remembered for the most, one of his signature escapes, definitely, his invention. Yeah.
Now, have you done that yourself?
Yes. Yes. We have a few different versions of that, actually. Harry Houdini had designed a poster that showed a torture cell. So what a torture cell is, I guess, for people who don't know, it's the Chinese water torture cell, or torture cell is sort of short form. You can picture it as a phone booth with no door. So it's a square, long, or tall box. It's made of steel and plexiglass. And then the top is open. And what's on the top is a set of stocks. So on this set of stocks, that they lock to the cell. So the cell's filled with water, and then my feet are put in to these set of stocks. I'm raised upside down. My hands are handcuffed. I'm raised upside down over top of the cell. I get my last breath, and then I'm plunged to the bottom of the cell. So I'm in this water-filled coffin even, an upright coffin that my feet are at the other end of me. I'm upside down, and I need to escape the handcuffs and get out of the cell. And that's what Harry Houdini is quite famous for.
And these are real handcuffs.
Yes.
That's amazing. That
but Harry Houdini
amazing.
Actually had a version. Sorry?
No. I'm just going on in my mind. I don't think I could be dropped in a cell like that upside down without being handcuffed. It just sounds terrifying.
That's funny. Yeah, it's the first time Richard builds all our magic or our escape equipment, and the first time I was hanging above the cell when he built our first water torture cell, I was looking down into the water thinking, oh my God, what am I doing, you know? But by then I committed myself to it. We put all the time and effort and everything else into making this water torture cell that I thought, well, I've sort of committed myself, I better deliver. So there I go.
Now, I had read that Houdini would spend up to 3 minutes underwater in the Chinese water torture cell. How long will you stay upside down?
It's, you know, you don't really stay upside down longer than you have to, but it just depends on the performance style that we decide to do. Some people do it where they go behind the curtain, and then after a certain period of time, they raise the curtain to show first the performer's still in there struggling. But there's different options. We can play it any way we want. We can just play it where I go in, and then the curtain goes up, and then the next time they see me, I've escaped, or we can show it where I am, you know, in there struggling.
Right. Well, I guess what I'm asking is, how long can you hold your breath when you're in there?
We actually don't release that information. It's it's sort of one of our trade secrets. Yeah.
All right, so when you're doing this, I'm not going to be seeing it the whole time. You have a curtain, and it kind of comes back and forth, so you don't know. So we don't see you struggling the entire time.
We can perform it both ways, yeah. So it sort of depends on the audience, the customer that we've been hired by, sort of what they want. We work with them all the time, so we can kind of play it either way.
Now, Houdini is a real legend in the escape artist, I would say, history of great legends. Is there any women that hold the same type of status as Houdini? And if so, I mean, who is your role model, if you have one, that you looked up to when you were becoming an escape artist?
There's not really any women that have the same status as Houdini. I don't think anybody has the same status as Houdini. It's I would say Houdini is my role model. He's certainly as legendary as society's led to believe. But it's funny because a lot of escape artists today, they denounce him and they scorn him publicly, saying they want nothing to do with him. And then there's others who say that they're better than he is. But I don't think it's possible for anyone to be better than Houdini was. He is or was the quintessential escape artist. From all the books about Houdini that I've read, I think he was an incredible person. He was the biggest superstar of his time, and from what I've read, he was the first superstar ever. He was a world phenomenon in a way that we just can't comprehend these days. He was the highest paid entertainer of his time, but he was also
wow.
quite generous with that wealth. So an example, he was over in Scotland, and he provided over 5,000 pairs of shoes for the children after one of the shows that he did. He
wow.
was helped by some people when he was younger, and when he made it big, he started sending them checks of, you know, every month, and he continued to do that up until his death. So he was, there's quite a bit more to the man than most people know, but he's definitely legendary in my mind. And I would say he is my role model for a number of reasons.
I would think. I mean, you have just brought up several things I had never even heard about, which, I mean, his character sounds as extraordinary as his escapes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's a very interesting man. Very interesting.
Having done some of these escapes that he's done, has that gotten any heightened respect by you for him, realizing what it actually takes? I mean, most people watching from the audience probably can't really fathom what it's like to actually
mm-hmm.
do one of those escapes. For example,
yeah.
being, you know, going down into the Chinese water torture cell.
Mm-hmm.
So since you've become an escape artist, has that given you greater respect for what he's done?
Yes, for sure. For sure. The physicality of that man is absolutely incredible. He never smoked. He never drank. He never, he was very picky about what he ate. He would run around tracks, just doing jogging around a track, yelling out his lines. He was incredible, in my opinion, just incredible. He's really raised the bar to a point where it's going to be hard for anyone, in my opinion, for anyone to match, if not beat. Very, very extreme. I guess extremely dedicated is what he was to his art.
Now, what did you do before you were gotten to be an escape artist? What was your day job?
I was in the infantry for 3 years, but I was also a computer engineer. So I worked with computers and.
That's
sorry.
That's a huge shift.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, it really was.
What did your friends and family think of your choice to go and become an escape artist, especially at the level you're performing?
To be honest, they didn't say much. They were supportive. My dad, he told me that he said I wasn't allowed to die. So, okay. Sure. Okay, Dad.
Okay, what is your most difficult act?
We have six, we have all, you know, we have so many different escapes that we do, and there are six that are tremendously physically challenging. There is a version of Houdini's water torture cell where he designed it for a poster, and he never actually built the cell. He actually died before that could be done, so he never built it or performed it, but it has a cage on the outside, and we call it Houdini's vintage water torture cell. So that is incredibly challenging. The vault and crucible, that's challenging. I did an upside-down milk can escape. The milk can was filled with water. I was locked up in a straitjacket with chain and locks wrapped around me. I was hung upside down and lowered into the milk can, and then the milk can was locked. That was quite interesting. We have other escapes, Fatality, Cubed, our asylum escape. they're all extremely challenging to do. And if you're a little bit tired or you're a little bit off, it makes it that much harder. You have to really stay focused. You have to really stay on the mark, on the ball.
Now, when you perform, will you do all six, or will you pick three, or because of the, I'm sure, focus and, as you say, the physicality of doing this, that you'll only do one? When you're performing, how long and how many escapes will you do?
We can put together an escape show if a customer were to request that. We certainly have enough stuff we could put together an escape show, but we like to do it as a magic show with escapes intermixed. So we typically do magic. We'll do some escapes intermixed within the performance, and then we do as a finale one of the water escapes that we perform.
Great. Dale, we have a caller, so I'm going to pick up the line. Let's see. Hello, caller.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, we have escape artist Dale Crowell on the line. Do you have a question?
Yes, I have a question. In all the years she has done it, has she ever been injured?
Have you ever been injured, Dale?
Yes, bumps and bruises, tons and tons of bruises. I've never broken any bones. There's been, I've burst some of the blood vessels in my eyes there. That was a few years ago now, but just because of the pressure. When I was hanging upside down, in the torture cell, there's the water pressure to contend with, but I also had a bit of a cold, so there was the pressure within my head, and however that worked together to make the blood vessels in my eyes pop. So other than that, no. But, yeah, tons and tons of bruises, tons of sore muscles. And yeah.
I have to ask you, Dale, have you ever panicked when this is going on?
I have. There are times when I have panic, but, you just try to, your life is on the line, so you try to refocus as, you start to recognize the fact that you're getting to that point of panic, and you try to refocus, focus on the task at hand, what you're doing, what the next steps are in that. With this upside-down milk can escape that I did where I was, in the straitjacket and chained up with locks and that, it was so dark and so cramped. And there was something so cold and unnerving about being upside down underwater, tied up in this canvas straitjacket, these layers of chains and locks wrapped around me. The milk can is made of steel, so it's very cold, and it's pitch black. And I really, really needed to use all my wits to stay focused. Actually, for that escape, when we did our first full rehearsal, I was tied up in the straitjacket, chained, locked, and then I was hung upside down. And as I was lowered into the water-filled milk can, Richard started getting panicky, and he's undoing the hook that I had hung from, and he looked into this black can, and he thought, oh, my God, what are we doing? Have we gone too far? Is this too much? So it was interesting. The panic can come from both sides.
Yeah, caller, do you have any other questions, or is that your question?
Hello. Yeah, I've got another question. Has she ever felt that any trick was too much for her?
Any trick that you'd say no to after you just performed it once?
No, so far there hasn't been any limit. We just work, we get an idea, and we sort of work out all the bugs that we can. And then we continue to do work on it until we can realize it, till we can make that a reality. So far, no. But here's hoping there won't be. But we'll see how it goes.
Do you have a last question before we let you go, caller?
Yeah, I have one last question. Is there any trick that Harry Houdini did that she couldn't do?
Oh, that's a good one. Is there anything Houdini did that you say, hey, this is off limits? I'm not going to touch it. Thank you for calling as well, caller.
So far, no. But there's a number of escapes that he's done that I haven't yet. Really, I've just scratched the surface. This Harry Houdini toured the world doing escapes for kings and czars and queens and all over the world. It was incredible. And he was locked into every possible contrivance available. He locked in locks from Russia. He was locked in locks from England and who knows where. And he had that available, or he was challenged with it. Whereas today, I haven't toured to all these places, and a lot of these incredible restraints don't exist anymore, at least in everyday life.
Now, one of the tricks that I had read that he had done, that he almost died doing, was, if I have this right, where he was buried under 6 feet of ground, and he couldn't get out from under the soil and just barely made it out, and his assistant put it, pulled him out. Have you ever considered getting buried?
The buried alive? No, we haven't. We haven't looked at that one yet. We do have a stage version of that where it's a long, tall, or sorry, not really long, but tall plexiglass box, and we fill it with earth or sand or whichever you want, really. And then locked inside, so you have to escape. But to actually have a hole dug outside in the earth and be buried in it, no, we haven't done that yet.
If you were going to break down what it takes to be an escape artist, what percent would you give to your mental capability, and what percent would you give to your physical capability? Meaning, you know, what do you really have in order to be a successful escape artist? Is it the mental focus, or is it physical agility? I mean, what do you need?
You know, if I were to say, I'd have to say it would be 50-50. You need to be in shape. You need to be capable. You need to be able to use your body to fight for your life. And if you're not in the best physical shape that you can be, it can be extremely dangerous. For the other, the mental side of it, it's at least 50%, because, you know, you have this thing that preserves your own life. There's this self-preservation thing everyone has that screams at you when you do something dangerous, and it's saying, what the heck, you know, we're trying to keep you out of these kind of situations. So you really, really have to be able to control your fear and manage your own thoughts when you're in these situations, because again, your life can depend on it. If you panic, everything goes downhill really, really quickly, and you can't afford to lose even a second of time when you're locked underwater or in any of these situations where your life is on the line.
Has this mental training bled over to any other areas of your life? Do you find that you are more calm and thoughtful and less frequent to become agitated or panic in your day-to-day life? I mean, has this, these mental exercises actually helped, in your life general?
Yeah, that's a really good question, actually. Yeah, I would say that it has. I've realized that This will sound funny, but I realize pain doesn't matter. That if something hurts, it's temporary. You can work beyond it. You can work past it. That it's there. You certainly acknowledge it. You can't ignore pain. And you take that, but then you can still stay focused. You can still get the job done, so to speak. Does that make sense?
Yes, no,
yeah,
totally.
Okay.
I would think, you know, you are building your mental muscles as well as building your physical muscles.
Yeah.
Now, for women listening to this show, young and old, how does someone break into this career? Is there a school you can go to? Are there books you should read? Can you get an internship? I mean, this is such a unique profession, and it seems, in my mind, that it's so filled with these secrets or these, I don't know, how you do them, that seems to be totally not obvious to the general public.
Yeah.
How do you get into it?
The only school that I know of is in the States. It's by a gentleman named Harley Newman, and I believe he teaches escapology. I've never trained under anyone. Richard and I have trained ourselves. We've developed our own techniques and procedures for our escapes. They seem to be working well for us up to date, but, yeah, that's the only school I know of.
Now, are there any escapes that you're currently doing that, to your knowledge, no other women are currently performing?
Actually, we have a handful of escapes that no one else in the world is performing. Because we build our own escapes and we design a lot of our own escapes, it's just sort of how that's worked out. We have that the vintage water torture cell that I described earlier that has the cage around it. That's actually the only one of its kind in the world. So I'm the only one that's ever performed it. We have another thing, the crucible in the vault, which I described earlier. We have another one, cubes. There are a few people that are doing that, but that's an original to us. The upside-down milk can escape with the straitjacket. We have another escape called Phobia, which was copied in the movie Saw 5. Then our asylum escape is another one where I'm locked into a straitjacket with chains and locks, and then I'm put into a 20-inch square cube filled with water. And it's so hard to get my last breath before the lid is locked down on it, but that's another one that is exclusive to us that no one else in the world is doing.
That's amazing. Now, how can our listeners get in touch with you if they want to learn more about you or perhaps find out where you're going to be performing next? And do you have any of your clips on YouTube that people can watch?
We do have a YouTube channel, yep. We just, actually, it's pretty recent. We have just over 160,000 hits, I think. It's a pretty recent addition for us. We have
160,000 hits. That's amazing.
Yeah, we're pretty excited about it. So,
congratulations.
Thank you. But that's Sherry and Crawl Magic. If they do a search for Sherry and Crawl Magic, they'll find that. We have our website, of course, which is www.sherryandcrawlmagic.com.
Could you spell that out for us?
I'm sorry?
I hate to. Could you just spell it for our listeners? So they know if Sherry is spelled, you know, with two R's or one. And just,
okay. You want me to spell it out?
Yeah, just spell it out because it makes it
certainly
easier.
So it's www.sherryandcrawlmagic.com. So sherryandcrawlmagic.com.
Terrific. And before we hang up with you, I just wanted to ask one last question. What would you like to achieve as an escape artist, and how would you like to leave your mark on the world of escape artists as a woman and as a person doing escapes that no one's ever done before?
I'm going to continue pushing, see where it takes me. We still have a number of ideas for different escapes that we haven't made into reality yet, so we're looking forward to doing that. I look forward to just exploring things in the future. Anything's possible,
Terrific.
Really.
Terrific, and we hope to have you on our show again, Gail. And also I'd like to say that Gail is a real adventure woman on adventurewoman.com, and you can see her and her mini bio there. Just go to adventurewoman.com and go to Real Adventure Woman, and we are thrilled and proud to feature you on our site. And
thank you.
It's been a real pleasure and privilege to have you on our radio show. So
thank you. Thank
you
so
again,
much.
Gail.
Nice talking to you.
Best of luck to you. Stay
safe. Thank you. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.